AT Safety's Common Sense Preparedness, an American Readiness Program. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome you to the show and let you know what you're in for. Common Sense Preparedness was designed to give the American public the much-needed information on how to manage and respond to any type of disaster we might face, natural, man-made, or personal. We will not tell you who to vote for or talk about conspiracy theories or when the world is going to end, but we'll get you ready in case that does happen. During this show, you'll be exposed to current emergency information from government and non-government sources, a few musical artists, and we will talk about the true important information that everyone needs to know. First aid, CPR, what is a tornado, what to do during an earthquake, how to prepare a family emergency plan, a family emergency communication plan, how to hunt, fish, how to build a fire, what to do in case of power outages. The show will be hosted by myself, Tim Howard, and a variety of guests who will come and share their expertise with us. Nowadays, everywhere you look, someone is an expert. Just because someone writes a book or runs a blog does not make them an expert. However, my credentials? Well, they're pretty extensive with over 25 years field experience as a chemical biological warfare instructor, firefighter, correctional safety manager, area safety manager, safety inspector. I have been associated with various federal, state, and local governments. Currently, I'm associated with the FEMA think tank, OSHA field councils, and HE safety consultants. I have received numerous awards and citations throughout my career with the United States Air Force, U.S. Department of Justice, founding member of the United States Department of Homeland Security, and the U.S. Department of Labor. What does this mean? Well, it means you'll get reliable, verifiable information, not paranoia theories. I will share the experiences I have seen in the field since 1986, and I will be able to explain some of the why things are happening. Before we go any further, any information that you hear on the show or find on csp.hesafety.org is to be taken as informational only. We are not legal or medical advisors. We are here to give you alternate information to get you to think about things and use your own common sense to make your decisions. We do suggest that you talk to your personal medical and legal advisors to help you make a well-rounded, informative decision. Our website, csp.hesafety.org, has been designed to give you more information than can be found on this program. The website is free, so stop on by and begin your research with Common Sense Preparedness. You can download or review any of the past shows from our website and comment on any of the news articles that you may see. Also, please show some love to our sponsors. It is because of them we are able to reach you and offer you this life-saving information. Our sponsors have been selected based on the quality of service they offer to our listening audience. They are the vendors that should be of most interest to you. Common Sense Preparedness' mission is not to sell you anything, but instead it is to save as many lives as we can. It is sad to hear about any life being lost when it was avoidable. Remember, a wise man prepares for the darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Listen to Common Sense Preparedness at csp.hesafety.org.
Welcome to Common Sense Preparedness. With your host, Mike and Bob.
Alright, I wanted to talk a little bit about space weather. We've been hearing all kinds of stuff in the news lately about the solar flares and the CMEs. So it got me to thinking about space weather. What really is it? And what's out there? So I began to research it. And one of the biggest things I found was one big alphabet soup to me. X6 flares, C5 geometric storms, K1 flux. Flux what? Flux capacitor? Come on, that was in a movie. It went on and on and on. I realized this would take some time. However, there was a couple things that jumped right out at me. One, we're really not prepared for any kind of solar weather strike. We don't even know what it is. Two, solar weather is still in its infancy. We learn every time we get a strike. And three, I was never so glad the Earth was such a complex thing. I remember many moons ago, back in school, when they started talking about the different spheres that made up our atmosphere, the magnetic field around the Earth, I was bored to tears. I was never going to use that stuff. But when I was doing this research, I was wishing I had paid more attention to the teacher than I did to the girls in school. So what is it? Just as the Earth has a weather pattern, cold fronts, jet stream, and wind speeds, well, so does outer space. Our space weather is mostly controlled by the Sun, also known as Sol. That is because we're so close to it. Magnetism plays a very big role here with solar weather. Let's start with geomagnetism. Every planet has geomagnetism. The Earth's geomagnetic field is a combination of several magnetic fields generated by various sources superimposing on each other. More than 90% of the field is generated by movement of the conductive material inside the Earth's core. This is also referred to as the main field. Other important sources of the geomagnetic field for Earth include electric current flowing from the ionized upper atmosphere and currents flowing within the Earth's crust. There is also local anomalies produced by mountain ranges, ore deposits, geological faults, and artificial products such as trains, aircraft, power lines, etc. Now, the next thing we want to take a look at is solar wind. What is solar wind? Well, solar wind is an external force that we must keep an eye on. The Sun gives off a very strong wind from its outer layers. But a strong solar wind is billions of times thinner than any wind we face here on Earth. It mostly consists of electrons and protons with energies ranging between 1.5 and 10 kilovolts. The stream of particles varies in temperatures and speed over time. The solar wind creates a heliosphere, a vast bubble in the interstellar medium that surrounds the solar system. Solar winds also has an effect on geomagnetic storms. The delivery time, will it get here quicker, will it slow down, stuff like that. Now, two other things we want to take a look at is, one, solar flares and CMEs. Solar flares are pretty spectacular. Within an hour or less, an area of the Sun the size of Earth suddenly lets loose of a blast of X-rays and other powerful radiations. Traveling at the speed of light, this will reach Earth within 8.5 minutes. Now, these solar flares, they can harm the astronauts in space and damage some satellites. However, fortunately for us here on Earth, the atmosphere of Earth is so thick, we don't have to worry about them. The only thing that solar flares can do to us here is knock out shortwave radio, and it destroys part of the atmosphere called the ionosphere. That's the top layer of the atmosphere. Now, solar flares are classified as A, B, C, M, and X, according to its peak flux. The higher the number, the stronger the flare. So an X flare is stronger than an A flare. Now, CMEs, or coronal mass ejections, for reasons astronomers don't fully understand yet, like I said, we're still in our infancy, the Sun occasionally burps and sends out these huge clouds of gas into space. By the time they reach Earth's orbit, they've grown to be millions of miles across. Most of the time, these clouds are sent out in other directions than the Earth, so we don't have to see it. But every once in a while, we'll see one coming at us. It usually takes about 2 or 3 days to get here. Travel about 1 million miles an hour, too. Now, the effects on Earth, because of the complex and strong atmosphere that we have, we're protected about 80% of the time. And the other 20% are directed at airline flights that are fly over 35,000 feet and fly over the poles. Plus, the electrical industry is at risk here, not the average citizen. But a reliance on electronic communications and utilities are at risk, so a big solar storm can cause blackouts and disruptions in communications to include cell phones and TV. Now, the current concern is the Sun will produce an EMP that will fry all of our electronic devices, an EMP being an electromagnetic pulse. I still believe that is part of a geomagnetic storm. Well, let's use some common sense here. From what we know so far and what we've talked about, can it happen? I'm not sure yet. I've not been able to verify with a reliable source that it can happen. People talk about it, but I have not verified it. But if it does happen, I'm under a firm impression that destroying all of our electronics would be the least of our worries. You see, in order for that to happen, the Earth's geomagnetic field and the ionosphere will have to be destroyed prior to it. Without those two items, not only will we be missing our electronic devices, but we'll be dodging every near-Earth object in the area, and I believe there's a total of 1,272 objects in the area. Plus, any radiation from the Sun, which is almost a constant thing, will not only melt the polar ice caps, but the radiation levels on Earth will rise so high, it will kill everything on Earth. So should you be worried about the CME, solar flares, flux capacitors, and such? Well, yes. It tells if the Internet's going to be disrupted, or why our GPS keeps on resetting itself, and makes us prepare for possible electrical power failures at times. But do we need to occupy the underground bunker and place all of our electronics in fryery cages? No. If it gets that bad, then we have a lot more to worry about than losing our electronics. I know. Everyone's saying I'm wrong. Well, I might be. If you have credible proof that I'm wrong, by all means, email me at csp@hesafety.org. And if I am proven wrong, I will bring you on the show to correct me. But until then, I think we are creating our own fears. Go to csp.hesafety.org and under Solar Weather Report is all my research on the subject. By all means, use it and determine for yourself. Am I correct or am I not? Now, another item we have to worry about is near-Earth objects. Now, that's a real danger. Near-Earth objects, or NEOs, or meteorites, if you were able to take a look at the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, you would see rocks the size of Texas there. Now, if one of those objects hits the Earth, there's nothing you can do. Life is over as we know it. My advice would be, go and try and catch the rock as it falls to Earth, because once it hits, it's going to destroy our atmosphere, all plant life, all animal life. I know about survivalism, but do you really want to survive in that kind of condition? No food, no sun, no nothing. The atmosphere is going to be gone, so you're probably not going to survive anyway. Go catch the rock. However, there's a lot of small NEOs that can hit the Earth and wreak devastation. These are the ones that we need to watch out for. There's nothing you can do about the devastation it will cause, but you can be prepared to continue life after the impact. The devastation can range from almost anything, from destroying a city block to destroying a whole region. So what we need to know is what to expect from an NEO. Okay, we have an asteroid hit, a large one. Well, you're going to have earthquakes in the region. You're going to have dust in the air. Now, with the dust, you're going to have reduced sunlight for a long term, which means no solar power, no gardening, no food, and you're going to have contaminated water. These are just a few things you want to think about when we talk about asteroids hitting the Earth or near-Earth objects. So how do we protect ourselves from this? Well, let's get prepared. Prepare yourselves for earthquakes. What's the common preparedness for earthquakes? Strap everything to the wall? Have an emergency evacuation plan? Stop, drop, and cover, and hold on? Also, there are going to be contaminated airborne particles in the air, so you're going to need an N95 dust mask to walk outside. Possible higher radiation levels. If the asteroid has radiation in it, well, we're going to have to suffer through the radiation levels. So radiation contamination, decontamination protocols must be used. Radiation monitor must commence. We're also going to have a lot of dead people, so open death protocols have to be enforced. How do you bury your dead? What type of diseases can you get from human remains? Stuff like that. The fourth item we want to look at is the lack of food. Animals and plants will die off with lack of sunlight. So what are we going to do then? How about alternate food sources? How about greenhouses? We can generate our own electricity. So how about greenhouses? Contaminated water sources. We're going to have to look at water filtration. Are we prepared for that? Decontamination of the water. How do you do that? Boiling the water. Alternate sources of water. Water is our life substance. Without water, we're going to die, so you need to be able to procure some. And no sunlight. So with no sunlight, because of the dust in the air, you're going to have A, no solar power, and B, vitamin D deficiencies. Now, the no solar power deficiency is a problem, yes, but we have alternate ways of generating electricity. So you have to have a backup plan. Hey, no solar power? We have wind power. We have water power. So there's other options we have to face. We have to be prepared for. Yeah, I want to take a few minutes to talk about the environmental alert that was issued by Common Sense Preparedness on May 1st in regards to the Japanese nuclear crisis. A senator from Oregon, Senator Wyden, on April 16th, he issued a press release regarding the nuclear power station in Japan that was devastated by the tsunami and the earthquake. He personally toured the facilities and issued a couple letters and a press release. You can go to csp.hesafety.org to see the press release and the letters. We have links up there. But here's the curious part. Senator Wyden reported the situation was worse than reported. This fact is not the first time the Japanese authorities, or TEPCO, has been accused of this since the devastating earthquake last year. The senator noted how fragile the power plant is in its current state. Any more seismic events could bring the plant into the position of releasing radioactive material into the environment. We are not over this threat yet. It is still lingering but not being talked about anymore. Because of this press release and due to the fact that this accusation has been levied before, I'm urging all residents of the Western United States, be prepared for a radioactive event. Create plans for shelter-in-place situations or SIP situations, decontamination protocols, and home medical treatment plans for radiation sickness. Hey, we can no longer sit and wait for TEPCO or the Japanese government to properly secure the nuclear material that might cause a radioactive fallout that will be felt in the Western United States. We must begin to prepare for the event right now. Common Sense Preparedness will be doing a series of shows and reports on how to mitigate a radiological event over the next few months in order to help prepare us for the possibility of this tragic event coming to the Western U.S. shores. Now, one of the things that really got to me was, on April 26th, Common Sense Preparedness issued another environmental alert about the tsunami debris that was headed to the U.S. The debris from the massive Japanese earthquake and tsunami from last year is heading to Alaska, Hawaii, and the U.S. West Coast, and Canada, experts say. Debris is scattered over 4,000 miles in one direction and 1,000 miles in another. It's a large mass. The Japanese government has estimated that 70% of the debris sank. But, you know, CNN was reporting that nobody's certain how much of the remaining 1.5 million tons of debris is still floating in the Pacific Ocean. Buoys, a soccer ball, an unmanned fishing trolley, and other items that float on the surface of the water and can be pushed by the wind have already turned up. The problem here is that the oil and chemical drums and fuel cylinders could also wash ashore. Now, put that together with the radioactive material in that nuclear power plant that could be devastated by any kind of seismic event right now. And granted, most of that would probably sink to the ground, sink to the ocean floor bottom. But what radioactive release will there be? And it will be coming to the U.S. Now, as for the tsunami debris, NOAA says models show the outer edge of the debris is at the West Coast and Alaska, and most of the debris is north of Hawaii, moving east slowly. The front edge of it has gotten here, and a whole cloud should arrive by the end of another year. NOAA said it's unlikely radioactive material from the nuclear power plant would make landfall, but there's a possibility. The U.S. Coast Guard said the Coast Guard would focus on pollution threats and potential impediments to navigation. But what about a radioactive fallout? I don't think they can handle that. It's difficult to predict just where the debris will come ashore. Due to the wind and current, we can only forecast a few days in advance, but it should be an upswing of debris on the shorelines in the next few months. On March 11, 2011, earthquake and tsunami in Japan crippled the nuclear power plant, destroyed homes, and killed thousands of people. It's not over with yet, folks. Until they can secure that material to where it will be safe in any kind of seismic event, we still have a possibility of radioactive fallout reaching the U.S. We must be prepared. We must be prepared for a radiological incident. We're only going to have a few days' notice, if any. So we must take it on ourselves and prepare for ourselves and our families in case this should happen. And like I said, HE Safety, Common Sense Preparedness will be doing a series of educational series on items that we can find that will help us through any kind of incident. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on BBS Radio. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operation Team. preparing one person, one community, one country at a time, providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support, health care, and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, hoteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Or give them a call at 678-431-8914. Once again, that is 678-431-8914. And let them know you heard it on Common Sense Preparedness. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hoteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier.
Common Sense Preparedness brought to you in part by PatriotMusic.com.
America is known the world over for its passion for freedom and individual rights. If you love your country as much as I do, and if you'd like to hear great music inspiring this passion, check out PatriotMusic.com. Download music from three great albums, including a new album just released with a cover you won't forget. PatriotMusic.com.
Hi, this is Matt Fitzgibbons with PatriotMusic.com. You're listening to Common Sense Preparedness with Tim Howard.
This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Rocky Mountain Survival Gear, your complete source for all things camping and prepping. They recognize the need of many people in the United States struggling to put together survival packs, not knowing where to start or what they need. So Rocky Mountain Survival Gear will be offering customized bug out bags, emergency kits, and 72-hour bags to fit your specific needs. All you need to do is click on the items you need, and they'll put it together for you. Remember, once a disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare, so prepare now for the future with Rocky Mountain Survival Gear. Contact them at www.RockyMountainSurvivalGear.com or give them a call at 720-244-9701. Once again, that's 720-244-9701. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on BDS Radio. Welcome to Common Sense Preparedness, an American Readiness Program, and its Summertime Safety Edition. Summertime brings the pleasures of beaches, picnics, camping, or just getting away from it all. With all that excitement, it's so easy for one mistake to go boom, away to the hospital we go. Summertime fun is gone. Now, we remember some simple common sense items like how to travel the road safely, proper grilling instructions, and swimming pool safety. We can give ourselves a better chance of enjoying the whole summer, and not from a wheelchair either. Traveling safety. Getting there is only half the battle. Getting there safely is the other half. Hey, look, pay complete attention to your driving. Remember, the vehicle that you are in control of is a 2-ton deadly weapon that will hurt your family first and then you. Is that phone call or text message worth it? Speeding. This is one thing I just don't seem to understand. Seems like everyone is going 10 to 20 miles over speed limit. Why? You always seem to get to the same red light as everyone you just passed. Okay, I understand. If you're going over 100 miles to your destination, speeding might get you there 15 minutes faster. Is it worth the risk to you or your family? Slow it down a bit. Not only does this decrease your risk to yourself and to your family, but it also saves some gas. And with today's gas prices, any gas-saving idea is a good idea. Tires. Look, your tires keep you in control of that 2-ton deadly weapon you're driving. During summertime, check your tires daily. A blowout at 50 to 70 miles an hour never ends nicely. Usually it ends up with the car flipping multiple times. I've seen this happen. It happened to so fast that the poor 18-year-old girl had no idea what to do except hold on for dear life. The car flipped 6 times. We almost had 3 dead all within 15 seconds. All because of bad tires. Look at it this way. If you are traveling 70 miles an hour in 110-degree weather, you can assume the roadway is about 180 degrees. The friction between your tire and the 180-degree roadway, where the rubber hits the road, can cause the temperature to be well over 300 degrees. Now, if the rubber thread is thin, or the wires are showing, how long do you think it's going to take before it blows out? Check the tires daily. Use the upside-down penny method. Place a Lincoln penny upside down. If the thread is not covering any part of Lincoln's head, then replace the tire. Check for any metal showing on the tire. or any objects inserted, nails, screws, etc. Vehicle emergency kit. Your kit must contain emergency blankets, cheap, inexpensive silver ones, a small toolkit, a pocket knife, maybe a small amount of cash, less than $10, something to make a phone call or grab a bottle of water for, WD-40, and electronic flares. Hey, if you have these old magnesium flares, I would highly suggest you get rid of them as fast as you can. Check with your local fire department. They'll be able to tell you how to get rid of them. Or the county sometimes will have these hazardous waste days to where you can drop off hazardous waste. Either way, I would get rid of those magnesium flares as fast as you can. They will ignite and spontaneously combust at times. Also, your kit should contain some kind of storable food, granola bars, MREs, trail mix, something that will last for a long time in the heat. And don't forget the formula if you're traveling with those infants. Your emergency vehicle kit should be checked twice a year. Let's say October 1st and May 1st. Sometime in October and May. In October, prepare the kit for the cold weather. And in May, prepare the kit for the summertime. All your vehicles should contain a first aid kit. If you have young children, this kit must contain bandages. How else are you going to take care of all the boo-boos on the road? I would suggest bandages, gauze, tweezers, sanitary napkins. Hey, they can be used as compresses if all else fails. Ace bandages, duct tape. Believe it or not, duct tape was used in World War I as a bandage. However, duct tape fixes everything, right? All right, here's another thing. Auto accidents. If you're the first on the scene of an auto accident, please stop and assist. There's always something you can do to help out. If anything, you can help direct traffic. Or maybe you can help save the life. Or maybe you can make the phone call. Think of it this way. If you were the one in the accident, wouldn't you want someone to help you out? Anybody to help you out? Now, if a bunch of people are already there, or emergency services are already there, there's no reason for you to stop. Go by slowly and ensure that you don't cause any other accidents. Emergency shoulder traffic. If you see people standing on the side of the road, or law enforcement or emergency services on the right side of the road, if you can do so safely, please move over to the left lane. Give whoever is on the right side of the road enough room to work. Too many times I've seen someone not paying attention, just not thinking, walk around a vehicle into oncoming traffic. Motorcycles. Motorcycle awareness. The warmer months bring them out in droves. Be respectful. If you have a motorcyclist in front of you, give them about 4 or 5 car lengths space cushion, the space between you and the vehicle. This way, if anything happens, they lose their balance, they hit a rock in the road, and dump their bike, you will have enough room to react and maybe not run them over. Also, be aware of your surroundings. If you have a motorcycle around you, check your mirrors 3 or 4 times before changing lanes. Remember, Murphy's Law dictates that when you go to change lane and a motorcycle is around you, you will always be in your blind spot. Be cautious. Be safe. All right, now, remember to check HESafety.org, Common Sense Preparedness website, for more information on summertime travel and safety. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Patriot Music. Their new album, Patriot 3, can be purchased online at patriotmusic.com. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on PBS Radio. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operation Team. Preparing one person, one community, one country at a time. Providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support. Health care and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, hotteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Or give them a call at 678-431-8914. Once again, that is 678-431-8914. And let them know you heard it on Common Sense Preparedness. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Pure Hydration Water Purification Systems. Rocky Mountain Survival Gear is now the sole U.S. distributor of Pure Hydration Water Purification Systems, which uses no chemicals, has no wait time, and can be filled from any natural water source.
The purifier eliminates pathogens, viruses, bacteria, chemicals, heavy metals, fecal matter, sediment, bad taste, and odors, and quickly turns potentially contaminated water into safe and clean drinking water. Pure Hydration offers their purifiers in 6 different personal carrier modules for every outdoor endeavor. For more information, contact Rocky Mountain Survival Gear at www.rockymountainsurvivalgear.com or give them a call at 720-244-9701. Once again, that number is 720-244-9701.
I got a chance the other day to take a look at the 7-day, 2-person emergency kit from Health Operations Team. This kit is a great basic starter kit. While it does not contain all the emergency supplies that you'll need during a prolonged disaster, it has enough supplies to ensure that you will survive any 7-day disaster. That's why it's called a basic starter kit. The first thing I noticed was the versatility of the bag. It can be used as a backpack, carried by the handle, by the shoulder strap. It even has wheels on it, so if you need to roll it, you can. The food package and water supplies make the kit kind of heavy, but these are basic requirements, and there's no way of getting around this weight. That's one of the reasons physical conditioning is a requirement in any kind of preparedness plan. Now, everything in the kit is stored in plastic Ziploc bags for weatherproofing protection. First idea I got in my head was, it showed me that I can use it, this weatherproofing idea, for other items. I mean, even a radio came in a plastic bag. The kit comes with a standard first aid kit, hygiene products, rain ponchos, light sticks, rope, and even a pry bar, just to name a few items in the bag. So it has a lot of equipment in there that you do need, some basic equipment. You're going to want to modify it to your family's needs. If your family needs medication, you're going to want to put the family medication in there, extra eyeglasses and such. Health Operations Team has a complete listing of all the items contained in the kit on their website at hoteam.org. Now, the price on the kit is unbeatable, $130, while all other outlets charge a minimum of $199-$200 for similar kits. Health Operations Team is offering these kits at cost with zero profit margin. What a deal. But what I want to remind you is Health Operations is a non-profit organization. If you can show them any kind of love, please do so. Even if it's a dollar, they need the help. They need the money. So they can go ahead and give these kits to people who are in need, who really need them. Now, some of the items in the kit that I would recommend to change, one would be the radio and the flashlight. Both of them are items that use batteries to operate with. I would exchange them for solar hand-cranked items. I mean, there's no reason to carry the extra weight of the batteries. There's nowhere to recharge them or anything like that. They're good for the home cache, but if you have to use it as a bug-out bag, I'd have solar equipment with me. Now, the coloring book and crayons, that's another thing I'd probably be changing. Now, if you have a kid that's less than 5, it's a great distraction for them. For the older kids, this is where we want to customize the bag for ourselves. We have older kids, we want to put some other stuff in there. However, it does have a deck of cards for adult distractions. Both the food packs and the water packs are edible, trust me. Now, granted, I'm a very picky eater. It's not my preferred food of choice, but in an emergency, well, I know I can eat them and get my calories that I need. They are edible. Overall, I was pleased with the starter kit. The price was great, and they'll get you through any type of emergency. So I'm recommending that if you need a kit, contact hoteam.org, and they will be able to get you one. Now, they have a special price program available for disadvantaged and the elderly. So when you talk to them, let them know what you're doing and who you are, and that you heard it on the radio show, and see if you qualify for a discounted program. But even if you don't qualify, it's still a bargain at $130. So contact Health Operations Team at www.hoteam.org. Or you can call their Georgia phone number at 678-431-8914. Once again, that number is 678-431-8914. I wanted to go ahead and play this song for all the men and women who have paid the ultimate sacrifice protecting this country, and for those who are still out there who have written a check to include their life to protect our freedoms. Thank you. From Common Sense Preparedness, we love you all. Take this opportunity to talk about the Responder 84 ALS backpack from 511 Tactical. Now, when I first saw this backpack, it was during tornado recovery operations in Kentucky earlier this year. I was immediately impressed when I saw all the equipment the medic had in his backpack. He even had an O2 bottle, and it was secured well to the inside of the backpack. When the medic opened up this ALS 84 backpack, I noticed that he had every type of trauma equipment that he was going to need, including neck braces, an O2 kit, an AED, a smaller bag containing medicine and syringes, and another one containing bandages and clot stoppers. The medic even had a portable air splint system in his backpack. Now, they are large. There was also enough room to contain all this guy's paperwork that he needed. The medic explained to me that he had been using the backpack for a few months now, and he said it was the greatest thing since sliced bread in the border field medic. He told me it was easy to carry and has large enough compartments to hold the basic equipment he needed in the field to handle almost every type of emergency he would face. Now, my idea for the bag, when I saw it, was a little bit different than his. With that much room, I figured not only would it be able to handle my family medical kit, which is extensive, but there'd be enough room for my bug-out equipment also, reducing my overall number of bags I would need to carry. So when I got my Responder 84 ALS backpack from 511 Tactical, I immediately loaded it up with all the stuff I had and took it on a test run. I bugged out to one of my family's retreat points for 3 days. The bag was able to handle the heavy load I placed into it, including food rations, a water pack, solar blankets, an emergency radio, solar lantern, a pry bar, tarp, fire starter kit, military rain gear, military jacket, and my essential jerky and candy stash. I was even able to place my family emergency manual in the top layer compartment. To my surprise, after all this, I still had room. So in went the gun cleaning kit, the trauma kit, a shovel, a mess kit, a two-man tent, and my navigational pack. Then, on the outside, I attached my machete, a CPR kit, a small fishing tackle bag, and my trusty old sleeping bag. That is when I hit my first problem with the backpack. I still had room, and no more equipment. Good problem to have. So then I placed it on my back and automatically felt the weight distribution on my shoulders and my upper back. It was actually comfortable. When I got to the retreat area, I unloaded what I had needed in order to eat and set up camp. Now, after dinner, I laid down in my tent for a few minutes because, you know, I was not as young as I once was. And I started to listen to the music of nature. The next thing I knew, it was getting extremely cold outside, so I jumped into my sleeping bag and fell right asleep. I awoke in the morning to a snow-covered campsite. I was not prepared for that, not at all. I went to grab my field jacket and realized that my backpack was not with me in the tent. I had left it outside. Oh boy. My three-day trek was now down to 12 hours. Now, if my jacket and my extra clothing in the backpack are wet, well, I just have to return home early. However, to my surprise, after brushing off the snow, all the contents in the bag was dry as a bone. And that included my printed family emergency plan. The ALS 84 backpack system from 511 Tactical saved the trip. I was able to get the fire starter kit out and make a hot cup of coffee. The versatility of the backpack and the amount of equipment it was able to handle made me an avid believer. It can be used as a professional medical response kit or a bug-out kit. The overall 3,941 cubic inches can handle most equipment, and the YKK zipper system on the bag is a great improvement over the old zipper system that would always get stuck and eventually break. Another item of this backpack that I found interesting was the see-through zipper mesh pockets on the inside of the bag. It is of great value when you're not sure where your items are stored. A quick glance, and you know where your equipment is without having to open up each pouch to find out where they're at. The removable kit system, blue and red bags, is useful for storing small items and keeping them separate from the rest of your gear. I was able to store a med kit in one, making it readily available if I needed it. I also found a Velcro inside the pack to be useful for attaching my mag light holder and a few of the other belt pouches that had Velcro on them. This way I was able to have my pandemic kit secured without having to search for it. Overall, I found the Responder 84 ALS backpack to be a great addition for $249.99 because it is large enough to turn two bags into one. With each bag costing about $150 each, you end up about $50 ahead of the game. For more information on the Responder 84 ALS backpack, come visit csp.hesafety.org. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on CBS Radio. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operation Team, preparing one person, one community, one country at a time, providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support, health care, and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, hotteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Or give them a call at 678-431-8914. Once again, that is 678-431-8914. And let them know you heard it on Common Sense Preparedness. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier.
Emergencies happen every day. Are you prepared for a crisis? HE Safety can help. Together we'll prepare for natural and man-made disasters, medical emergencies, extreme weather, and other safety-related issues. It all happens on the Common Sense Preparedness Show, hosted by Tim Howard of HE Safety Consultants.
Take that.
Common Sense Preparedness would like to announce our new Emergency Information Network is on our website. Here you'll find the latest news regarding food safety, emergency news, FEMA daily reports, medical alerts, solar weather alerts, and hurricane reports. Plus you'll find links to outbreak databases, near-Earth objects, solar flares, and information from government and non-government outlets. Come join us at csp.hesafety.org and take a look at our new Emergency Information Network. Remember, a wise man prepares for darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Listen to Common Sense Preparedness and American Readiness Program at csp.hesafety.org. Or follow us on Google Plus and Facebook.
You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on BBS Radio. Swimming pool safety. Drowning is a leading cause of death and injuries in the home, especially for children. Many children drown in pools and spas. It can happen very quick and you won't even hear it. But by following some simple guidelines, you can prevent a tragedy from happening. Your best defense for a pool or spa is to install a fence that goes all the way around it. The fence should close and latch by itself. It should be at least 5 feet high. Learn CPR before anything happens. Always keep gates closed and latched. Never prop open a gate. Why spend all that money on safety and not use it? No running. The pool area is very slippery and accidents can happen quickly, resulting in head or spinal injuries or just broken bones. When children are near or around water, an adult should watch them very carefully. Never take your eyes off them, not even for a second. Accidents happen real quick. Watch your diving. Watch the depth of the pool. Spinal cord injuries are very common when the pool is shallow. Learn CPR. If you have a pool party, have adults take turns watching the children at all times. Hey, another one is, any non-swimmers in your family? Enroll them in swimming lessons taught by a qualified instructor. Why have a pool and not know how to swim? When swimming, use the buddy system. Never swim alone. Even adults should swim with a buddy. Learn how you would save someone in trouble. Learn CPR, first aid. Make sure that anyone who cares for your children also learns CPR. Check out HESafety.org for upcoming classes in your area. Keep poolside rescue equipment and a cordless water-resistant telephone or cell phone close to the pool area for a quick emergency notification. Post emergency numbers and CPR instructions near the pool area. The pump in the pool or spa creates powerful suction at the drain, which can trap swimmers underwater. Teach your children to stay away from these drains, grates, or filters. Long hair. Tie up long hair before swimming. Pool drains should have a cover. For added protection, consider purchasing a safety guard to install over the drains. Never leave toys in or around the pool when you are not there. That it just entices little children to go play with those toys, and if they fall in, you'll never know about it. Don't fall asleep while sunbathing. Believe it or not, the sun can kill you. Learn CPR. Get the point? Look, CPR is getting simpler and simpler to use. Join one of the many HE Safety CPR classes in your local area and gain the knowledge of how to save a life. Hey, it could be your own child who needs the help. Teach children the rules of the pool. Remind them often, so often. Keep spas and hot tubs covered and locked when not in use. And then completely remove pool and spa covers before anyone gets in. Getting tangled up in those covers will drown you real quick. Stay out of the pool during severe weather and thunderstorms, especially if lightning's in the area. Lightning will strike a pool. Electricity and water do not mix. And if your child is missing, check the pool area first. With a drowning, minutes can mean life or death, so you need to be there fast. As the weather gets warmer, it brings out the chef in most men. We dust off the grills and begin to dream about all the hamburgers and hot dogs we will prepare while having some backyard fun. But do we even think about the dangers that we are facing when using that grill? U.S. fire departments respond to an average of 7,700 home fires involving grills, hibachis, and barbecues every year, including an average of 3,200 structure fires and 4,500 outside fires. These 7,700 fires
caused an annual average of 13 deaths, 120 injuries, and $70 million in property damage. 29% of these home structure fires involving grills started on a courtyard, terrace, or patio. 28% started on an exterior balcony or open porch, and 7% started in the kitchen. Flammable combustible gas or liquid fuels was the cause that started half of these grill fires. 50% of these fires happened between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. between the months of May and August. Well, those are the facts of the matter. However, there are some things you can do to better protect yourself from becoming part of these statistics. Keep the grill at least 8 feet from the home and other combustible material to ensure proper ventilation of the grill. Charcoal must be kept dry. Wet charcoal can spontaneously combust. Spare propane bottles should be stored in a safe place during grilling time. Check propane lines and connections before use for any leaks. Use a soapy water solution and spray the connectors and lines while gas is turned on. If a leak is present, it will produce bubbles. Do not use the open flame method to check a gas line. Very, very unsafe. Do not use the grill if you have a leak. Just common sense there. Keep children and pets away from the grill even after you are done grilling. Grills will maintain their heat for a long period of time. Never put hot ash in plastic or paper bags. Use only metal containers. You would be surprised at how many people do this mistake. Take it easy on the lighter fluid. Fire can travel up the stream of fluid very fast, and then you're the one on fire. Also remember that lighter fluid is very dangerous if swallowed. Please keep it out of reach of children. Never use grills or hibachis on patios of apartments or condominiums. This is just unwise. Both you and your upstairs neighbors seem to lose everything. Plus, charcoal produces carbon monoxide, a silent killer. Before you know it, you're dead.
Thank you for tuning in to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness and American Readiness Program. Remember, a wise man prepares for darkness while full faith. Don't get caught playing. Tune in to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness.
Is using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao, and even Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Teach the lessons to your daughters and sons. The fear of the government, the fear is your guns. Now the new world order crew, well, they're making their demands. They don't feel safe if you are wrong. You say gun control is using both hands. Gun control.
is using both hands.